As we always do on a Wednesday, we visit with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com. We'll get to that in just a moment. Have to tell you, the doctors of Blue Tail Medical Group are some of the nation's top experts in the fields of sports medicine and stem cell regenerative therapy. So if you're in line for surgery, before you do it, think about Doctors Bays, Crane, and Wolf. They are experts in stem cell regenerative therapy. We're talking about your own body stem cells, redirected to concentrate all of their power into the joints that cause you pain. So whether you're a high school athlete, a vet, or your joints have been worn by age, before you think of surgery, think about the doctors at Blue Tail Medical Group, and they'll show you how you can get through it. The number to call, 636-778-2900, 636-778-2900, or visit them at bluetailmedicalgroup.com. We do this every Wednesday. We visit with Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. And as always, Brian, it's great to hear your voice. Hopefully you're safe, you're healthy, and we're going to have baseball less than a month away. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Yes, and we just have to hope that the current health conditions will enable that plan to remain on track.
What do you think about the news? And I'm going to get into a bunch of different topics as we always do, but what did you think about the news when you saw the different municipalities in Arizona basically saying and signing off, officially signing off and saying, hey, we should push spring training back? And then baseball later that day, the Players Association basically saying, no, we're not going to do it. What was your reaction to seeing all that?
Well, my first thought was, it's amazing how times change, because if you go back a little bit less than a year, both Arizona and Florida were jockeying to try to be the site for all of the teams to, you know, begin their camps while the COVID outbreak was early on. Now reality's hitting Arizona, and all of a sudden it's, oh my gosh, we don't want you here now. Even though there is, you know, a tremendous impact to their economy from spring training, I think their hope is that, you know, by waiting another month or so, then more fans will be able to travel and it will be better for their coffers. And frankly, you know, the owners would probably like a delay as well, because for them, starting the regular season later means a better chance that more fans can come to the ballpark. And if they start a month later, that's potentially 1 month less of salaries that they have to pay all these major league players. But as you pointed out, there's no legal grounds, it appears, that MLB can truncate the season. We've seen other sports like the NFL and others who've been able to play full schedules, albeit, you know, taking much greater care than usual. So, you know, the Players Association is saying, no, you know, we want to play 162. And another way the owners might address that, we don't know this for sure, but what they might do is, you know, schedule more doubleheaders in to make up for that first month lost if they have to begin the season a month late. But right now, all this talk is still tentative. As of right now, you know, the major league season is scheduled to start on time. And one of the things that we saw from the Cardinals and the Marlins this past week is that they've opened up sales for spring training tickets, again, in a structure not unlike what they've announced for St. Louis, which is, you know, pods of 2 to 4 people, 6 feet apart, that kind of thing. So the ballpark will be roughly 25% full, but at least there will be an opportunity for fans to go see spring training games, assuming they're held.
You know, what it tells me, Brian, is that the distrust has never been greater, maybe, between the Players Association and the ownership. And when you can't even settle on the DH at this point, which is, in my mind, ridiculous, but I understand it's the carrot that they hold out there to negotiate. It just sets up to where we might be this time next year. Not to get too far ahead, but, you know, we want to see a CBA. We want to see a continuation of the sport. We want fans to enjoy it. And it's unfortunate that here we go again. This is coming front and center, where it's the money and the different things of the business side of the sport instead of talking about what may happen on the field. And that's disappointing.
It's very likely that 12 months from now, you and I will be here talking, and we'll be talking about the fact that the owners are threatening to lock the players out unless the players agree to CBA terms of their satisfaction. And the players are going to say, heck no, we won't do that. And I think there's a very realistic possibility that the 2022 season won't start on time due to a work stoppage.
Yeah, it's hate saying it, but yeah, I agree. Let's go into the Hall of Fame, which is kind of the buzz topic at this point right now with Major League Baseball, at least in the last 24 hours. No one elected to the Hall of Fame. So from a Cardinals perspective, kind of cool that you're going to see Ted Simmons and you're going to see Larry Walker, who spent a year and a half in St. Louis, Derek Jeter, Marvin Miller, all get their due being on that stage as the 2020 class, no one else going in. So what did you think of just the general idea of not having anybody elected to the Hall of Fame?
Well, I think it was a good reflection of the current reality, because the three guys you know, that have been at the top and are still at the top are Curt Schilling, Barry Bonds, and Roger Clemens. And Bonds and Clemens have sort of been lumped together. Pretty much almost every single writer who voted for one voted for the other or didn't. But, you know, Curt Schilling is an interesting case because of his controversial stances off the field. And that, you know, certainly hurt his chances. But all three of those guys fell short. And the key point for them is that this was their ninth of 10 allowable seasons on the ballot. So 2022 will be their last shot. And they clearly, none of them have any momentum right now. And odds are they probably will not get in. But the positive story is the next tier down. And there's maybe four or five guys in that group, Scott Rowland, Omar Vizquel, Billy Wagner, Todd Helton, Sheffield. Those guys are in the 40-50%. And Rowland, among all the players who repeated on the ballot, had the biggest jump year to year. He jumped like 17%, and he's at 52% now. So I think the odds are very good that Scott Rowland will enter the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 2022, and that would be a wonderful thing, very, very, very deserving.
I'll be interested, and I had him on my radio show yesterday. I'll be interested to see what hat he would go into the Hall of Fame with. You know, he's a sentimental guy. He appreciates that the Phillies drafted him. He was a rookie of the year there, had great years. Very good years with the Phillies. He had great years in St. Louis and won a championship, went to the NLCS multiple times, postseason burst, that kind of thing, the MV3. And grew up a Cardinal fan. You know, he used to talk about going from Jasper, Indiana to St. Louis or to Cincinnati to watch Major League Baseball. So I'll be interested because I do think his trajectory is now taking him to the Hall of Fame. And once you're above 50%, it's very, very hard on his type of trajectory with the years remaining not to get in. So I'm going to be curious to see what hat he wears going into the Hall of Fame. I don't know if you've thought about it, but I have. It's something I think about.
Yeah, I went back and looked, and, you know, half of his gold gloves, four of his eight gold gloves he earned with the Cardinals. And, you know, that's a significant stat right there. His best season offensively was the MV3 year of 2004, 30 home runs, 124 RBI. So, you know, you can certainly build a case that says the peak highlights, and, of course, you know, played in the World Series, those are probably the peak highlights of Scott Rowland's career. But, you know, he might choose to, you know, take the Tony La Russa way out and say everybody's tied for first and not. But, you know, and again, you know Scott much better than I do, but I tend to think and hope that he will have that Cardinals logo on his cap on his plaque in the hall.
Yeah, I'm with you. You know, we don't have a vote, Brian, and I'm not sure I'd want to vote. And maybe we need to look at how voting is redone, or at least the wording of exactly what, for lack of a better term, the morality clause, that kind of thing, as it pertains to some of these players. What do you think about that, expanding the voters and giving other people a chance and not putting all the responsibility on the writers?
Well, I have a lot of respect for the writers who have a very difficult job here. And many of them, you know, there are a handful of the ones that stand out who submit blank ballots or send in a ballot that only has Jeff Kent's name on it who are a joke. And they should be disciplined and really taken out of the process, in my opinion. But the vast majority of writers, you know, put the time and effort into it. And many of them share their thinking with readers so there can be good dialogue. And I think that's great. But the core problem, in my opinion, is that Major League Baseball and the National Baseball Hall of Fame do not provide clear guidelines to the writers on what they should consider and what they shouldn't. The whole steroids era, how is that to be handled? In my opinion, the Baseball Hall of Fame is a museum. It's not some kind of a palace or
Agreed.
Some kind of a religious,
that's right.
You know, body. And so my take is that those players with flaws should be recognized as having flaws, but that shouldn't take away from their accomplishments as players on the field. Now, Pete Rose, that's a different case because he explicitly broke baseball rules and he's banned. But the point is, you know, the writers are forced to make these very difficult morality decisions with no real guidelines. And I think that's just wrong. And so I think there are definitely people who deserve, to your other point, I think there are definitely people who deserve to have a vote who are not sports writers, not tenure members of the BBWAA. But I think the biggest issue is just guidelines that don't make sense.
In terms of Curt Schilling, basically a very, from the heart letter to the Hall of Fame, Major League Baseball, saying, take me off the ballot. I don't know if he can do that. Maybe you know that for sure, but what did you think of that? And I don't think he gets in next year. If he's not in this year, he's not going to go in next year.
Well, I think it's pretty obvious that he read the handwriting on the wall. You know, he made some very controversial comments about some of the events that happened in Washington, D.C. earlier this month, and that didn't endear him to, you know, a lot of people. And, of course, our political environment in the country is so highly polarized right now. You know, anything you say, half the country is going to be angry at you. But I think Schilling was taking a proactive move by asking to be taken off the ballot because he knew he would be lucky to get 71% again next year, probably won't. And again, that's his last year on the ballot. However, you know, it's nice that he can, you know, ask his way off, but everything that I've seen so far is that's not going to happen. That's not part of the process. People don't opt in or opt out. So, you know, chances are he'll drop in the, you know, his percentage next year and not make the Hall of Fame. And as he said, then he wants to be considered by the veterans committees, you know, down the road. And that's what will happen. He'll go into that pool just as, for example, Ted Simmons and others before him.
In terms of the Cardinals, we do have at least some word coming out on the camp of Colton Wong. And the reports are the Cardinals have checked back in with him to see, you know, where he's at. That would be interesting to be reunited with Wong.
Yeah, I don't know what kind of odds to put on it, Dan, because the Cardinals have, you know, set their budgetary plans, and they've said all along that their first priority is to resolve Molina and Wainwright. And so, you know, unless Wong's price really, you know, really drops down, I'm still not holding out that much hope that he'll be back with the Cardinals. But what we have seen in the last few days is a tremendous uptick in activity on free agent middle infielders. Andrelton Simmons to the Twins, Marcus Semien to the Jays, Tommy La Stella apparently heading to the Giants. So, you know, and of course, LeMahieu going back to the Yankees was the big first move. So point being, a lot of these free agent infielders are now finding homes. So the teams who want somebody, you know, Wong's got to be moving up the top of the list. And we finally did see yesterday some inkling of, you know, maybe half a dozen teams, including the Cardinals, who have checked in on him. So, you know, you'd have to think that Wong will find a home pretty soon, but it could be before the Cardinals are ready to commit to him.
I love what you do with the minor leagues. I always tell everybody, go to thecardinalnation.com. Because I love seeing your top 50 and the guys that you put in the top 50 prospect list. And you've got kind of a group this morning on your website of an article I read about, you know, the guys that are kind of knocking on the door and some sleepers. Get into that a little bit, Brian, and who you're looking at.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing that we do here at the Cardinal Nation is we go deeper on prospects than anybody. You know, you may see top 20 lists or top 30 lists elsewhere. Well, we go 50 deep every year. But in fact, we vote for at least 60 players. And so there are always a handful of interesting, intriguing guys that just fall out of the top 50, don't quite make the top 50, but we're called out by all of our voters. And so article up today where I profile eight guys who could have made the top 50, but just fell short. And there are kind of two groups of guys. There are guys that are closer to the major leagues or have been there, like Rolo Ramirez. We saw briefly pitch in relief for the Cardinals, Lars Nootbaar, an outfielder at Double A. But then we've got some young guys who are, you know, still down in the system, Darla Moquette, an outfielder. And the guy that I've highlighted as my sleeper pick for the year, a catcher named Jake Burns, who is a teenager from Australia, who was actually signed in November 2019, but because of no minor league season has yet to play. But Burns is an interesting guy because, you know, he comes from down under, the land down under in Australia, and he's been a veteran of national, well, really world competition representing his country. And he's, in fact, playing right now in the Australian Baseball League this winter. So he's a guy that, you know, hasn't played yet in the system, got a $400,000 bonus, which was one of the largest in the international class that just ended in December, the 2019-2020 class. So he'll be an interesting guy to watch, probably starting the Gulf Coast League, I would guess. But, you know, he's the kind of guy that, you know, if he moves, you know, shows promise, could move up quickly through the system. And I'm talking about Jake Burns.
How did they find this guy? Just through the international competition?
Yeah, I think so. The Cardinals, like all, you know, organizations, you know, look at the various World Cups that occur, and he played in the under 18 and the under 15 World Cups. And so those guys, you know, get on the radar. I don't know how the Cardinals beat out other organizations for him. I haven't met him yet, so I haven't been able to talk with him a little more about his backstory. But, you know, looks like an interesting guy, and he's my sleeper pick for 2021.
I always say this, Brian, as we wrap it up. If you can play, they will find you. And that includes playing baseball in Australia, I guess. It's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really a global game, and you know the Cardinals have had some success in the East as well. But it would be a quite an interesting story to talk about a success story from a player down under. But again, a lot of baseball to be played, and Burns isn't even quite in our top 50 yet. But you know, it'll be interesting to see what he does when he finally can get on the field for the Cardinals.
Absolutely, I love it. Let's wrap it up with this. What's coming up on this pit that next week, and what's happened on this past week at thecardinalnation.com?
Well, a couple free articles up that have gotten a lot of attention if folks haven't seen them. I looked at some of the catchers who have signed across the game to try to extrapolate what Yadier Molina's value might be just as a player, forgetting about his legacy as a Cardinal. And depending on which set of numbers you use, he's in the $5 to $6+ million range compared to other catchers. And that includes JT Realmuto's big $115.5 million deal with the Phillies. But, you know, the question for Yadi will be then how much above that should he get because he's a Cardinal icon. The other thing that we looked at in detail is Jack Flaherty's arbitration case. He's, of course, and the Cardinals are heading toward a hearing in February, and whether he gets $3.9 million, which is what he would like, or the $3 million that the Cardinals would like to give him. And we did a comparative analysis looking at three other pitchers, Brad Keller, Luis Castillo, and Lucas Giolito, and came to the conclusion that Flaherty probably should win his arbitration case against the Cardinals and make that $3.9 million. But, you know, we'll see what happens.
Brian, as always, great stuff. We'll catch up next Wednesday.
Thanks, Dan.
That's Brian Walton of thecardinalnation.com.